Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Pensacola, Florida, it's time for Pensacola Business Radio. Now, here are your Business Radio X hosts.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. On this lovely Friday afternoon here in Pensacola, Florida, broadcasting live from DeVore Square, Pensacola Business Radio Top CEO Series hosted by Sandra McGuire and American Heritage Financial. And so that means that, Sandra, I get to turn it over to you and just hang out. So here we go.
Yay. Hi, everybody. Our guests today are Hazel Wigington from H2 Performance Consulting and Jeff Phillips from Accounting Fly, both of them CEOs. Thank you both for being here with us today. They're going to share their experience as entrepreneurs and CEOs, their successes, challenges, and what's next for them and their companies. And we have some standard questions that we like to ask, but first, and Hazel, let's start with you. Tell us about H2 Performance Consulting and what you do.
Yeah, so H2 Performance Consulting, we're a defense contractor providing technology and business services to the government organizations. More technology than the business services. We provide services such as cybersecurity services, project and program management services, as well as IT support services with technology workers such as network engineers and software application developers.
That sounds very high tech. How many employees do you have?
We're about 60 today, and then we have about another 15 subcontractors.
Okay. And Jeff, tell us about Accounting Fly.
Sure, thanks. So Accounting Fly is based here in Pensacola. We're an early stage startup, and we serve the accounting industry. What we do is, so I worked at Monster.com for about 7 years and understand the job board industry very well. We realized as we started our business that it's extremely difficult for accounting employers to hire accountants, harder than you might think. And so we built a model that works a lot better than Monster.com or Indeed or LinkedIn. And we put that together, raised seed capital, hired a team here, and mostly here in Pensacola. And we're in our starting our fourth year of business. And so we have some really exciting results to show for it. And the accounting industry has taken notice. We built a model called inbound recruiting, which is using the internet to work very effectively with recruiting. And our intention is to take inbound recruiting beyond accounting into a lot of other industries, healthcare, engineering, you name it. So we believe that we can do that over the next 5 to 10 years.
Wow. So you started with accounting and then you're going to roll that into other industries.
We are.
And you guys are right down the street here at the CIE, you said, correct?
Yeah. We are at the CIE. That stands for Center of Innovation and Entrepreneurship. That's a partnership between Pensacola State College and Florida West. And it's remarkable. We've been in there for almost 4 years. They've allowed us to, delay office expenses,
sure,
and high rent, internet expenses, and phones. They take care of just about everything. So let us focus on growing our business.
Yeah.
I like to say that I'm the old dog in that building. They're probably ready to kick us out, but we've enjoyed working there.
Yeah. Very cool. So I have some other friends that I do work with down there. Calvin and Joel, who I think actually are on your floor.
They're on our floor. Yep.
Yeah, what a very cool thing.
It's fantastic. I mean, not a lot of startup entrepreneurs have a view of a bay.
Yeah, water. Unless it's flooding through the front door.
Yeah, well, there's that too. But we got a pretty good view of Pensacola Bay, so it's great.
Cool.
So how many employees do you have so far?
We have 10. Seven of those are full-time. We also, part of our team is remote. We have employees in New York City, Atlanta, and Denver. So 3 outside of the area and 7 are local.
Sounds like you're off to a good start.
We are. I mean, we are solving a major problem, and it is not easy. It's not easy to help companies find the right talent, and they could always hire a headhunter to do it, but that costs a lot of money. So we're using the internet to really produce a perfect match between talent and these employers.
So where did you start your business? Did you start it at CIE, or did you start in a home office?
We for Accounting Fly, I started the business with 2 other local entrepreneurs. We got together as we started operations. We moved into the CIE. Now you have to apply to get into that program. So we did a presentation. We were accepted. That was 4 years ago. But yeah, right as we were starting, I moved into that building.
So you got a pretty sweet deal right away.
We did, and we needed it. So mm-hmm. we've had a software development team that is local. We didn't offshore our software product. And we have a design team that's based in Pensacola. And so we needed the office space, and it's been a good ride.
Yeah. So is that CIE program something that's unique to Pensacola? Have you seen something like that elsewhere?
A lot of other markets will have something like this. It varies. If you're in Silicon Valley, you'll see what they call incubators, high-tech incubators. This is in the same vein as that. So I do think it's rare for a city our size to have this kind of a program. I think it's a testament to the Chamber of Commerce that started it and then sort of handed it over to CETA, Florida West, when they split up. So it's a pretty remarkable program, and there are some remarkable companies in that building. You know, you drive past it and you don't realize it, but there are three or four very high growth early stage startups. They're going to be producing high paying jobs in this area for years.
I have seen some of the names on the door, and they are impressive, and some of the companies that have come out of CIE.
Yeah, we want to be one of them. That's for sure. And I think we're going to.
Well, it's been 4 years. You got four more, I'm sure. They'll let you out when you're ready to leave.
Well, you kind of have to graduate at some point in time. So, we're probably nearing the end of our run there. They're probably ready to get us out of there and put in somebody else.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to leave just yet, though.
Hazel, how about you? Where did you start your company?
Yeah. So he's exactly right. Jeff's right. CIE is awesome. Program locally, and we did not have that opportunity available to us. We've been in business 10 years. And so we started out, as home offices, my business partner, Holly, and I, and, we kind of took turns, going back and forth to one another's home office. And then our first client was local to Pensacola out at, the Pensacola Naval Air Station. So we were out there some as well. So we made jokes that the big deal was I had a dog and she had cats. And so they were all part of the extended H2 family and would approve our leave. And so that was always the big joke. So we did start out with the home office. About 2 years in, we moved into our first office, and I can say it is a challenge. I mean, you have to come up with the, you know, first in month, last month's rent and the rent, and we had to set up the place we moved into because we were going cheap did not have the technology infrastructure that we needed. So we actually had to invest in the technology infrastructure. Wow. So to have that, a CIE resource available is pretty incredible for local companies, because we sure would have enjoyed taking advantage of something like that. And I agree, take advantage of it as long as you can.
Might as well. Where is your office now?
We're up at Bayou Boulevard in Cordova Commons.
Oh, great.
But you just moved too. That wasn't your first office, right? You guys were downtown, weren't you?
Yeah, we were actually up there first, and then we moved to a different building, and then we moved downtown to City Hall. We were on the third floor of City Hall, so that was an awesome view. And it was really just too much space for us, and we were moving into an environment in my industry where there was just a lot of price pressure on. So we were trying to find ways to bring down our overhead costs. So we actually, in the meantime, the building we had moved out of up there was purchased by IMS mm-hmm. Expert Witnesses company. And so Bill Ween, with a little bit of pressure, kept on saying, "Come back up. I've remodeled it." And so we're back there now.
Did you let you bring the dogs and cats?
Yeah, no. Although I am trying to, we're expanding some space downstairs right now, and I'm trying to convince my business partner that we could actually have an office cat. So, because my husband's allergic, so I can't enjoy cats. So I thought, well, maybe if I just have one at the office, that would be.
You got to have one at the office.
Mm-hmm. Until they hit the wrong key on the keyboard, launch missiles everywhere or something. You know?
So it sounds like office space is one of the challenges that a new business has as it's growing. What are some of the other struggles that you've found as you grow your business?
Where do you start?
Well, you know, as CEOs and business owners, you're busy doing your business. You are your business, right? So there are other things that need your attention, like infrastructure.
Yeah. I mean, everything, I think everybody has a different story, but I bet there's some commonalities. We decided to go into an industry that is highly resistant to change and invent a product that they had not seen before. And so we had to invent that product too. I mean, at our core, we are a software company. We have a software that helps companies make faster hiring decisions on talent. And we also are the source of the talent. We market the companies to an audience. So we had to build a software product, and that meant we had to decide what the software product would do. And that meant we had to start talking to customers and actually sell the product before we even built the product. So we went out and talked to 100 customers and basically asked them, what is your greatest need? We are going to be a partner to you. And over our lifetime together, we're going to deliver certain services. Okay. So, that part I was good at. That felt great. And then you have to build things. You have to build your software product. So the first challenge, I think, for me personally was just managing my own time. I mean, should I be talking to customers? Should I be dealing with our office space? Should I be taking out the trash? Should I be helping build a software product? You would be surprised how many hours fly by in the day before you get that one most important thing that you need to accomplish done. One of the big lessons I've learned is to be very intentional about prioritization and try to block everything else out. If I can get the one thing that I think is the most important thing in the company done today, and even if that means I have to get it done tonight, then I can lay my head down and sleep. But for me, the greatest challenge that was sort of that I didn't expect was the demands on my personal time just to be effective. It's not like when you start a company, you have this massive team and you're just ordering your minions to go and build things.
Wait, you have minions?
No. Yeah,
darn
it. There are no minions. There's a very small core team, and it is just a lot of pressure on all of us. So we have to be very, very effective. At our company, we basically spend Monday planning the entire week.
That's smart.
Yeah. But we lose Monday as mm-hmm. a day of productivity.
Right.
But if you've read anything by Daniel Sullivan, the strategic coach, he is a great author and talks about use a day a week to plan out your productivity days. Those are the days you go and make money.
Yeah.
Or you do the activities that lead to getting customers, serving those customers. So our entire team, and it's a slog sometimes. I mean, we're in a lot of meetings. But then what happens is I know what my game plan is for the rest of the week. And I also, because I'm an individual contributor and a manager, so I know what my game plan is. I have confidence that everybody else knows what they're doing too. And they're really good at executing once we kind of come to the table and say, what do we got to get done this week? So time, greatest challenge that I could have not foreseen when I got into this.
Yeah.
Did you have a hard time identifying when you needed to let go of something and hand it over to somebody else?
Yeah, I haven't figured that one out.
Mostly because he doesn't have any minions to hand
right,
it over
exactly.
to.
Yeah. We're gonna get a minion. My kids yeah. homework for me.
Free labor here in the state of Florida, as a matter of fact. I have tried.
Child labor laws.
Yeah. They get so far, but you know.
I do think about that a lot though, Sandra, is the answer to your question, because I have thought about that, and I'd be curious what your take is, Hazel, because you're further down the road than we are. When I have confidence that something can be executed and that, you know, I've had a hand in kind of figuring out how something can be accomplished and there's a process that can do it, then I think that's a good opportunity to hire somebody or outsource that process so that it gets done. We produce a lot of videos. We're actually in the business of producing content for our employers. And I had to figure out how to do that first, but now our team kind of takes 90% of that work off my plate. So I show up, do a video interview, but then I can go and make customer calls after that while our remarkable marketing coordinator comes in and produces the video, gets it distributed. That used to be all me. Now it's not.
That's good.
So my answer to your first question, because I can address, I'd like to address both of those. So my first, I'll say there's a saying called, you know, work work on the business versus in the business. And it is a challenge. And, but our challenge, again, the difference between starting 4 years ago or starting 10 years ago was that 10 years ago, and really up until the last 5 or 6 years, software as a service wasn't really out there. So 90% of our workforce is actually not local to our office. They're out on client site, whether it's in Pensacola or New Orleans, or individuals that are in Washington DC or out in New Mexico. So for us, it was very important to make sure that we had a very customer service oriented environment for our employees, our workforce. And the challenge was several years ago as we're trying to implement some technology solutions so that they could be a lot more self-service and available. They weren't out there, and particularly they weren't out there as integrated HR solutions, for instance, that a small business could afford.
Right.
Everything mm-hmm. was at the enterprise resource ERP level. And so technology has come so far, and the availability of things like software as a service. But our challenge right now is we have about 6 of those that we've pieced together that don't talk to one another. So our next step is to start to consolidate that. So the first step is the challenge was the technology wasn't available. Now it's become available, and then it's trying to get it implemented, because you honestly can't afford to just shell out the money to bring in an outside implementer. And even when we've done that, it hasn't been that successful because they really don't understand our business. And so I think that, you know, everybody has the same challenges, whether it's like putting the right people on the bus and making sure that your team members can hit the ground running, or giving up work and learning to hand it off. But every business today is dependent on technology, and it really has to be part of the plan. And we are really at a stage for our company where we're looking at the next level investment, which is highly significant investment, but you're just gonna have to bite the bullet at one point and do it. And because the fact today that all of these, I have a human resource portal. I have Paychex as our Paychex portal. I have Sugar as our CRM. I have QuickBooks Pro. Nothing talks to one another at this point. And those are just some of the examples. So there's a lot of manual time spent batching things over, or the fact that they don't talk to one another. So I would say that the biggest challenge for us has been picking out the technology, then finally getting it in place. And then we start to feel good about ourselves, but we kind of hit a tipping point where that worked well for us. It was great at 25 people. Not so much at 50, and probably not going to work at all at 100.
Yeah.
I had a follow up.
Sure.
Well, so we're at 10, and my question to you was
not including minions.
I was hoping what you're going to say was, if I could do it all over again, there's one size fits all. And when we were, you know, our size, there could have been a you know, some software that you could have bought at that stage that would scale with you mm-hmm. that did talk to each other mm-hmm. as far as you know, your internal technology. Do you think that's the case, or have you found that essentially as you get to these different milestones of growth, you've got to retool your internal technology stuff?
No, today there is a scalable technology. Being a defense contractor, we have a lot of unique accounting requirements that for us that then flow over into how we keep track of our projects, permanent files, earned value management reporting, all the contractual reporting. And the only product in the market that you could do that with previously, and still really almost today, there's some new ones, was a product called Deltek. But it was on client. So it was on premise with you. It was hugely expensive. So in the 10 years, we've seen it not really a product that can be even considered by a small company. Then they moved to something that they thought was affordable that I didn't think was affordable. And now they've moved to a platform as a service capability that will provide almost an enterprise resource planning capability for us. And then they have since then created channel partners and relationships where they can bolt on additional like human resource management products and things like that that they didn't have previously. But this has really just evolved over the last 4 or 5 years. Commercially, I don't really, because that's not where we live, but I know in the environment I live as a defense contractor that Deltek is a product. So I've got to believe that if Deltek's doing it, there's several out there.
Somebody else is doing it. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I keyed up on when Hazel was talking about was you do have to almost reinvent your company at these different stages. You can sense that there becomes this point where it's almost like you're starting a whole new company again. And you asked about challenges. That starting up, it's not just to start up at day one. It's you have to reinvent yourself multiple times at different plateaus of companies. And we are seeing that ourselves, and we're a fairly small organization.
Right. You do. And I think a big key to growing is making sure that you get the right. You mentioned a couple of things, Hazel. One of them was making sure you have team members that can hit the ground running. Mm-hmm. Has getting the right people into your companies been a challenge for either one of you?
Yeah. So, yes, it has. But honestly, it's also combined with the stages of growth that you go through. So we doubled in size last year in January of last year. And we would reminisce about the days where we would be able to have more accounting and human resources individuals in-house. Because prior to that growth, our back office was about 3 people, right? And everybody wore multiple hats. And you're stretched thin and you're putting long hours in. And the thought was, oh, wow, we can't wait till we win the next couple contracts, grow, and we're going to have more people to do the work, the minions, right, Jeff? Well, the interesting thing is that for about 6 months after we added the people, we went through some real growing pains. Because guess what? When you have 3 people and in one particular process, only 2 people are involved in that process, and between the two of them, they own all 7 of the steps.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually easier, right? Mm-hmm. But now you bring more people in and you're parsing parts of the process out, and those handoffs that you took for granted get missed. And so it becomes a humongous challenge. And you just think you can add more people and tell this person to go start doing that. But the problem with that is you have to remap.
The process.
Exactly. And who has accountability and responsibility where the handoffs are. And we didn't really think about that. And there would be and people were kind of pointing at one another. And so that it was something we didn't expect at all. We thought, oh, more people, better. But it was harder on one level. Mm-hmm. When you added more people.
So along with bringing in more team members, mm-hmm. and that type of growing pain, that's one of the infrastructure problems I know I've experienced in many of the startups that I've worked, where we grew so rapidly that we kept bringing on more hands without putting in those type of processes before we brought in the new people. So there were a lot of long hours. Those growing pains, and along with that came frustration. How do you address that with your key people without them just throwing up their hands and walking out the door saying, I can't work like this? What do you do? How do you handle that?
One thing that we do, because that is a true statement, everyone that has worked at our company has been given a speech I like to call, why you shouldn't take this job at our company.
That's great.
At least you're pre-planning.
Yes. And when you hear that speech, and if you still want to work at the company, then one, I know you're ready for the ride. But the expectations that my leadership team sets and that I set is we're in the middle of an experiment to determine product market fit. And then once we accomplish that, we're going to experiment to determine how to scale a business. Okay. And then probably after, and that's where we are now. And after that experiment, we're in an experiment that's called how to build a mature company that can take on other industries. And every one of them is going to be very difficult because there are no easy answers. I do not know all the answers, and there isn't a guru to tell you all the answers. We're going to have to figure it out. So we interview real heavily on is the people able to handle big chunks of ambiguity. I handle that pretty well for the most part. And our team handles it really well too, because I think we understand the personality type that needs to fit that. We're in a science experiment. Oh, and by the way, there's something else. There's an egg timer. It's called cash, seed capital. It's running out. So you have to accomplish the experiment and find the answer before that thing runs out of money. So there's a little bit of pressure there too. So you got to be able to handle the pressure of dealing with that. A mistake I made early on was I'll take the pressure of that personally, and I won't disclose how tough it is to everybody else. Now that was a mistake. We're all in this thing together, no matter what, where you are in the organization. So that culture, I think that is one thing we got right was, look, you're going to have to deal with ambiguity and change constantly. If you can't, this is not the right place for you. So how you deal with the frustration? We go back to the first conversation. You signed up for this.
I think that in a small company, typically the owner is also the leader. And it first starts with us understanding that the non-owners in the company don't have ownership, and they're not, as much as you want them to have the same dedication and passion as you, it's not going to happen. And so sometimes you can drive too hard. And we set the tone for the culture and how people handle pressure. And the reality is that you can't be on all the time. You have to ebb and flow. And so there's a little bit, I think, of a almost kind of acting that goes on, because honestly, our pressure is never off, but we have to act like sometimes it is. And we can't be all up in the air all the time and driving so hard, at least outwardly, all the time, because it stresses people out. And then the other part of that is the ability to have let people vent. And then I think the last thing is I had a speech one time where a guy talked about celebrating. And so you have to stop and celebrate. I know when we won a contract a while back, and we were so happy, but we went right into trying to transition into it and execute, and we didn't celebrate. And everybody was, you looked back about 30 days later and people were at each other's throat and were burnt out. And it's because we just didn't slow down and celebrate the fact that we had achieved a milestone that we were really going after. And yes, it is, you know, that wasn't going to change that 30 days of transition was going to be tough, but we forgot that. So it starts with us and it ends with us, really. And you can't take and move out without those team members. But if you stress them out, you're going to lose some really good ones.
You're right. Celebrate those small victories.
Celebrate the small victories.
I also failed to learn that lesson, and picked it up in some startup books that I really appreciate. But I'm glad you said that, because you're dead on there.
Well, that leads me right into my thanks for that setup, Jeff. That leads me right into my next question, which, what's been your biggest failure and success in your companies, and what have you learned from that?
I'll go. When we started our business, we built a business plan that we ultimately abandoned. We changed the name of our company. We did a complete pivot 2 years ago. So our business is 4 years old. And, you know, you may have heard, I said it's an early stage startup, but you might have thought, aren't you guys 4 years old? What's going on here? But, 2 years in, we realized we had the wrong model, and we were serving the wrong customer. We wanted to be the monster.com for college recruiting. Well, I think we had the capability and the team to pull that off, but we didn't have the capital to pull that off. If we were based in Silicon Valley, I think we could have raised that kind of money. But we were signing up a lot of accounting firms and building relationships, but they kept saying, the real problem, thanks for what you guys are doing, and here's a small check, but what we really want, a problem that we really have, is we need help hiring senior staff. And in fact, about the same time, we started noticing polling data that was saying that of the 44,000 American accounting firms, finding qualified talent is the number one issue, not in HR, but facing their organization. And so You know, I only heard that 150 or 160 times before I figured maybe we should change this thing. Okay, so I don't consider it a failure. I do consider it an incredible lesson learned, but we turned a failure into a great success. We realized that we were barking up the wrong tree. And I remember thinking, will our investors be disappointed that we're sort of acknowledging the fact that we have to make a huge change? And that means that we were wrong, you know, and what we told them was wrong. I said, well, I guess it would be better to do that and own it than sort of like just fail, because that ultimately would happen. So we made a huge switch, right? We changed everything, the name, the website, what we offered. Now, what's our greatest success? It was everything that's happened since that decision was made. So it was the best decision from a business standpoint that our leadership team ever made. And because our traffic has grown 25 times to our website since that happened, we've seen triple digit growth consistently the last 2 years. And we're going to make it because we recognize, thank goodness, we're intelligent enough to pick up on the real pain point, make that adjustment, and then take off.
That's a good story.
Right?
Yes.
That's one of my favorite stories.
I think that's an excellent. And, you know, it's interesting because my story's similar in the fact that my failure created what I think is the greatest success. And I think that you probably hear that from a lot of CEOs. So ours was really centered around the fact that we had we call it the too many eggs in one basket. We had too much business with a singular customer. And when that fell out, when that contract, and they made it some different acquisition decisions, it ended up being a 30% hit overnight to our revenue and our company. And so that was the first mistake that we had in terms of being, and it's hard when you're small because you're just taking the business that you can get, but you do have to diversify and make sure that not too much of your business is with a singular customer. The second part of that is we extended ourselves a little further than we should have because we were growing fast and we leaned forward a little too. So it's CIE as long as you can. Mm-hmm. So we leaned forward a little too far. And so at the same time, and we had that commitment as well, where we'd made some decisions to invest. And so overnight our revenue fell out 30%. So we moved. So that's the failure. So that was not good decision making on our part. The success was that I was able to sit down with my accountant a year later, Holly and I were, and, you know, he was able to compliment us and say, you know, you guys got chopped off at the knees and most businesses wouldn't be here today, but you moved very swiftly and you made the cuts that you needed to, the salary cuts that you made it to. You went through you combed every account that you had and went and renegotiated, expenses. And we're able to get through that. And then it, of course, drives our posture today. So as today, we are a completely debt-free business.
That's awesome.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's huge. Yes. I feel like balloons should fall from the sky.
Yeah, where's the confetti?
Yeah, I know, right?
look at what you've set in motion as a from a financial standpoint because of what you call a failure, which really looks like a blessing in disguise, and the wisdom it gave you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. I'm
still letting it sink in for a second there. Yeah.
Wow. 10 years later. Wow. What a success story. Yeah. That's great.
Well, that set your team up too. So now all of the 50 that are with you now, I mean, they've got the fine tooth comb at their desk. Right. I'm assuming
it does. It creates you're always negotiating. You know, it's the ABC, always be selling or whatever it is, closing. It's always be negotiating. And so everything's a negotiation. And, it's always, you know, you don't want to ever stifle your business. So to say I'm debt free that, you know, 6 months from now I can come back and go, yeah, I took on some debt, but yet it's really about making sure you're taking on the right debt and not getting really your head. You keep your head in the game and focus on what's really important for your business.
Mm-hmm. So I want to go back to something. Each of you made a reference to something taking a back seat. For you, Jeff, it was your personal life, your business eating into your personal life. And hey, so I can't quite remember what it was that you
the cats.
Said.
It was the cats.
It was the cats. The cats
had to suffer.
but both of you now have, you know, a successful business, and talk a little bit more about what it is in your lives that has taken a backseat, or in your business or your personal life that you feel has suffered because of the success of your business.
We have, my wife also owns a business. So we have three kids. So we are extraordinarily busy right now in our age. Just this is the time of our lives. We're very busy, but we also believe that it will pay off for us in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
We have to take care of our businesses, but we're not going to neglect anything at home either. We, you know, what's funny is what gets neglected is some of the little things at home to, the maintenance issues, but we've got some support at our house that helps, keep the trains running on time at home. I'll just say, without going into specifics, but we have to have a lot of help. The way we've structured our lives is we make sure our weekends are for our kids, and we get home at 5 or 6 o'clock every night. So it's not, I'm not at the office till 3 o'clock in the morning. I will work after my children go to bed, and so does she.
So you never sleep?
You know what? I actually,
it's overrated, man.
Yeah,
it's okay.
It is. I mean, I get a decent amount of sleep. I'm doing fine there. But essentially for me is like, let's get that one important thing done today.
Mm-hmm.
And now that sounds so simple, because the one more most important thing done doesn't get started until sometimes 10 o'clock at night. But I don't care. I'm going to get it done. But I'm also going to read to my kids when they go to bedtime and eat together as a family. What's probably suffered is there is no time left over for anything else. You know, there's just not a lot of other personal fun stuff going on. And that's fine. If we can plug away at this for a few years. I just want to be around my young children, make sure that I don't miss out on that. And so does she. So we take care of those priorities.
Those are the priorities.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe we don't, our social life isn't what it used to be, but that's fine. We've been able to make this work, and is probably a testament to her. She's incredibly mm-hmm. organized, very task oriented. I'm more the big picture part of the equation. And so we get it through.
Yeah. But you know, her owning her own business too really gives, that's sort of a, you got to step up on that, because there are a lot of couples together, or just people out there, families, where one person works with another company and the other one has their own company. And I think until you really have your own company, you don't understand sort of that addiction,
mm-hmm.
you know, so you kind of have that other side that says, okay, I get it right now. You have to do this or you're just not going to feel okay, kind of thing.
I think you're right, Keith. I mean, we have each other's back because of that.
Yeah.
And we actually, it's funny, she's an interior designer, and her interior design business is two doors down from the CIE. So we are two doors down the street from each other, and our children are at school downtown, four blocks behind us. So we got our little downtown.
Yeah, thing. You got a radius. Yeah.
That's
it's territory. There you go.
The answer for me is, well, first, the reason that we were able to start the business was because I had a support network of my husband, because I went from being in a big five consulting firm to making really good income to making, I think it was like $15,000 the first year.
Mm-hmm. Lucky you.
Yeah,
at least you made something the first year.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so I have my mom locally and my husband, and then Holly, my business partner. So, I think I'm always fascinated with people that are sole proprietors and do it by themselves, because I don't know how they do it. Having a business partner is critical. And then more so, and then moving forward a little bit to the last several years, our director of operations, Kelly. So when you put those four people together, they're a phenomenal support network to kind of make it happen. The thing that falls off, I have young children too. I have a 5 and 7 year old, it's just, I think, really kind of taking care of myself and getting that time where I get to exercise is kind of not in the cards. Yesterday was in the office a little before 9. I left at 11:30. And then was back up. I slept in this morning to 6:30. So,
yeah, I feel you. That's sleeping in these days. Yeah,
exactly.
You're so lazy.
I know. So, but I too try to get the time. I mean, why I'm doing that, some the push this week is because my kids came home with excellent, report cards, and they get mommy dates when they do that.
Oh, right.
And so they get to dictate it, and I'm a little behind on getting to that date. And so in order for me next week to take two afternoons and go after school and do two individual mommy dates, I'm making a huge push this week. So, but I can tell you my house, I always describe it to people, that it looks like it imploded on itself. So that's pretty much my focus is my kids and my family and then the business, and pretty much everything else falls by the wayside, to be honest with you.
Priorities.
I want to give you the names and numbers of some people that can help you with that. We have help with laundry. We have help cleaning, and it is like been one of the life changing events of our family, because we realize, why do we feel so bad about, outsourcing laundry at our house?
Right.
So we have somebody come and do our laundry twice a week, and it's been one of the best decisions we ever made. And we get home and the house is taken care of, so we actually get time with kids. So I don't know why we didn't do it before.
It's a dollar per square foot thing. You know, you honestly have to look at what is the most productive use of your time. And if folding laundry isn't making you money in this sense, or making the business money, or, you know, adding to the long run, then if you can afford to outsource it, but it's that dollar per square foot. I come from the restaurant industry and owning and running and all of that. And so it literally was a dollar per square foot. How many square feet in here, and how many of those square feet can be utilized to turn over a dollar or a table or a customer? So some people look at that and they're like, dude, that's just weird. Like, you got somebody else folding your underwear, dude. You know what I mean? Like, but like you just said, it just frees you up to do five other things that you can do when you get home now, right?
Right.
Which ultimately add to your sanity and keep creating what you're doing. So
I'll tell you another one. Call Ed Smith. Ed brings us dinner once a week, and it's fantastic. And we eat that on Wednesday nights, and we eat the leftovers on Thursday nights. So we get
that's two
meals that are hot on the table that we don't prepare. My mom would probably, you know, disagree with that philosophy, but right now we need all the help we can get.
Yeah.
And he does a good job with it.
Yeah.
Wow. I give you his number.
I need that. I do have a nanny, and so I didn't mention that. But you know, when they reach a certain age, it's a lot harder for them to help do those other kind of things around the house, because they're running them to karate and music lessons and so on. I did have a family friend that was in between jobs, and I did have somebody like come in three times a week and just for a couple hours do my, it was the most wonderful thing. You're right. I do need to get back to that. She did make a comment to my nanny saying, she's like, I leave and I come back 2 days later and it's all messed up. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of the definition.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
That's why we need you.
Yeah.
So, if you could do one thing differently, what do you think it would be? And is there anything that you would do differently, or do you feel like your experiences were all good?
I need time to think about this one. You got an answer in the hopper, Hazel?
I think that, I don't really, I think that I have an answer to that. I know you gave us questions on that. I think that if I did one thing, for me, it's really about thinking about the business in general. I'm in the people business. I provide people to the government to build solutions or provide services or what have you. And people are hard. It's hard. It is very, very hard. And we run the gamut. We have people that are what would be considered like, kind of, junior entry level people all the way up to expert individuals. So also we have a very dynamic workforce. So part of me sometimes says, well, if I did, you know, if I did something differently, I'd actually just go into a product versus services. Right. There's that side of it because it really does get hard sometimes. And we're in a difficult business. Not everybody wakes up, you know, when your kid goes, you know, when we were young and we had to do our report on what we wanted to be when we grew up. You know, nobody comes to the table and says, I'm going to be a federal services contractor. It's just how things happened and how my life rolled out. And it's something I knew. So it made sense to go into it. But, to be honest with you, my client base is very hard to please and they have a very short memory on anything you've done well and a very long memory on anything you haven't done well.
You're only as good as your last meal, right?
Oh,
right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So part of it would be, I hope to eventually become a serial entrepreneur. So I think you'll see me move more product based than services. But I don't know. There's so many things that where we could have done things differently. I think in my world, I should have put more investment into the Washington, D.C. space, which is kind of the epicenter of federal services.
Yeah.
Probably several years ago, longer. So literally yesterday, the paperwork was signed on getting a business development person in that space. And I probably should have made that investment 5 years ago.
Yeah. There's a lot of multiple offices in that realm. Because I know we've done some of the tech stuff with I-10 and I-4. And all of them had two offices. Whether it was just a shared space in D.C. or not, like they were there. Like that, you just had to have a presence.
Sure. The Dulles Corridor, right? When you fly into Dulles Airport and you head to D.C. and it's nothing but, you know, basically government contracting firm after government contracting firm names down through the Dulles Corridor. Yeah. So, you do have to. And that's where a lot of the money decisions are being made. The spend is being made. So it may be executed out here in Pensacola, but the decision maker on the spend is up there.
Mm-hmm. It is good on the product side. I will tell you, that's where you should come next. Because if you build the challenges, it's harder to find a product that can be sold. And it's expensive on the upfront. If you are fortunate enough to find that product and there's a national market for it, then you're replicating the product, not your time, not your people's time. Our hope, we are a subscription business. And so our hope is that where we get to this year financially, we'll essentially start to see our margins get better and better every single year because we don't have to grow as fast. We don't have to grow our expenses as fast as we can grow our revenues.
Sure.
But that being said, what I would probably do differently is the stages of a product development. One is the key one is a product market fit. It's, does this product solve the actual pain point? And we didn't get that right at the beginning. And so it's taken us a long time to get off the ground. And it's because we had a misstep out of the gate. I've learned a lot about how to do that. So I also want to go through this process again. I'll know a lot more than I did the last time. I will tell you that because this was my first, startup that I was in the leadership of. So, how I would have done that differently, what we did well was, we went out and signed some firms to be our test guinea pigs and we gave it to them for free. What I would do differently is I would have sold them the product and charged the prices that I charge today. It took me 4 years to have the courage to charge what we have today. And we charge a lot of money now because there is so much value in what we do and there is profit in that. And I boldly acknowledge that and we deserve that because of the value that we deliver. Now maybe I wouldn't have been that confident back then, but this is what I would have learned. If I would have charged what we're charging today back then, we would have learned that there wasn't value in what we were offering back then. That would have been a big signal. Instead, I was making friends with everybody. Everybody loved Jeff, you know, at College Frog was the name of our first company, but they weren't willing to pay us for anything because we were giving them something of little value.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have my philosophy about product development is you sell it and you get paid to build the thing that you're going to get paid. Because if they're not going to pay you to solve a problem, then there is not a problem that needs to be solved. Then you need to wipe off the dry erase board and start over.
You know, what we should never say is what we would do differently is not repeat the mistakes we made. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you look at the most successful and admired business owners out there or CEOs, really business owners, what is common is that they had more losses than they did wins, mm-hmm. you know, so I look at the fact that you turn and tail 2 years in and made a completely different decision as wise, and you wouldn't have known that in the first 2 years. You had to get out, put yourself out there. So I think that when you say what would you do differently, is what we all should never do is repeat the same mistake.
Right.
Right.
If you want to be an entrepreneur, I would say that you have to get out in front of this mentally and say you are going to lose more than you win, and you are going to make so many mistakes that and you got to be able to endure that. Mm-hmm. I don't have guilt or regret or anything either about what we've done. It was a science experiment with an egg timer. And I knew that when I signed up for it. So did my wonderful co-founders, and so did our awesome team. So all of it is good. Right. Just get there.
Right. I saw an awesome quote recently that said, you don't have to win every time, but you have to want to win every time.
Well, you know, in the same vein, what just came to my mind was the quote, and I don't remember who said it, but it doesn't matter how many times you get knocked down. What matters is how many times you get up.
That is the truth. And, one of the blessings of doing this is, you get knocked down so many times. What happens is I'm not afraid of you knocking me down anymore. Mm-hmm. I will get back up.
Yeah.
And there comes a confidence from learning how to navigate failure. And I don't mean failure. Failure is such a weird word. It's just learning stuff. I've just learned a lot of stuff over the past 3.5 years. And one thing I've learned about our team and myself is we will see this through. No matter what, this will be seen through and it'll be a success.
In my business, it's no. When you first start out in my business, you fear hearing no. I don't care about no anymore. You can tell me no all day long. It's not going to scare me anymore.
Well, is there a market for what you sell? Absolutely. And I know there's one for what I sell. And when I hear a no, what I say is there a pain point that's worthy of a great company? Yes, there is. Is there a market worthy of investment and that will generate profits? Yes. All right. Let's call the next person.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wise wisdom here on Business Radio X. I can tell you that right now. You guys should write a book. So we are getting close to our time here, though. So before we get out of here, I would love for you guys to give contact information, websites, all that good stuff where people can. I need a government contract, so I might need to know how to get a hold of you kind of thing. So please, by all means, go for it.
Yeah. So we're H2 Performance Consulting. So we have a website, H2PerformanceConsulting.com. We are on Facebook and LinkedIn. Also, obviously, most people don't just call us up for a government contract. But if you do want our phone number, it is 850-474-0844.
You can learn more about Accounting Fly at accountingfly.com. Unless you're looking for an accounting job, there's not very much for you there. But you can learn about our company on our LinkedIn page. My Twitter handle is @JeffPhillips, and then the little underscore, the little thing that, not
that nobody can find.
Yeah,
that one.
Yeah. Just Google it.
Yeah, that's it.
We also own a website called goingconcern.com, Going Concern, and that is one of the largest news sites serving the accounting profession, and it is a sort of a combination blog and alternative news source for accountants. And it's one of the most widely visited websites pertaining to accounting news in our profession. And so that's a small acquisition we made last August. And that's a fun website to get to. Check that out.
Very good. Well, thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
This was very informative. I loved hearing from both of you, learning about your companies and your experience growing your companies and being a CEO. And I look forward to hearing more about both of you and Accounting Fly and H2 Performance Consulting in the future.
Thank you for having me.
So I feel motivated. Do you feel motivated?
I do.
I do. I feel motivated.
Let's go run through a wall.
Come on. Know, right? I was about to break out the Nerf guns first. So, Sandra, give them American Heritage's information, please.
American Heritage. You can find us at theamericanheritagefinancial.com. You can reach me at Sandra McGuire at...
There you go.
I know my contact information. Sandra McGuire at ahfplanners.com. And my telephone number is area code 312-804-5686.
Very good. All right, guys. This has been Pensacola Business Radio, Top CEO Series, hosted by American Heritage Financial and Sandra McGuire. I want to thank all of our guests for being here today. And this has been Pensacola Business Radio, where business is good and your work matters.